Epilogue. I think I've learned to be more patient these past few years, with others as well as myself. If so, it's one of the several improvements in my character that I attribute to my wife, Michelle. She's a daughter of the South Side, raised in one of those bungalow-style houses that I spent so many hours visiting during my first year in Chicago. She doesn't always know what to make of me. She worries that, like Gramps and the old man, I'm something of a dreamer. Indeed, in her eminent practicality and Midwestern attitudes, she reminds me not a little of Toot. I remember how, the first time I took her back to Hawaii, Gramps nudged my ribs and said Michelle was quite a looker. Toot, on the other hand, described my bride-to-be as a very sensible girl, which Michelle understood to be my grandmother's highest form of praise. After our engagement, I took Michelle to Kenya to meet the other half of my family. She was an immediate success there as well, in part because the number of Luo words in her vocabulary very soon surpassed my own. We had a fine time in Alego, helping Alma on a film project of hers, listening to more of Granny's stories, meeting relatives I'd missed the first time around. Away from the countryside, though, life in Kenya seemed to have gotten harder. The economy had worsened, with a corresponding rise in corruption and street crime. The case of the old man's inheritance remained unresolved, and Sarah and Kazia were still not on speaking terms. Neither Bernard or Abo or Said had yet found steady work. Although they remained hopeful, they were talking about learning how to drive, perhaps purchasing a used matatu together. There were deaths that year. Michelle's father, as good and decent a man as I've ever known, died before he could give his daughter away. Gramps died a few months later, after a prolonged bout with prostate cancer. Despite these heartaches, Michelle and I decided to go ahead with our wedding plans. Reverend Jeremiah A. Wright Jr. performed the service in the sanctuary of Trinity United Church of Christ on 95th and Parnell. Everyone looked very fine at my reception, my new aunts admiring the cake, my new uncles admiring themselves in their rented tuxedos. I watched Maya, politely fending off the advances of some brothers who thought they were slick but who were, in fact, much too old for and should have known better. But when I started to grumble, Michelle told me to relax. My little sister could handle herself. Michelle was right, of course. I looked at my baby sister and saw a full-grown woman now, beautiful and wise and looking like a Latin countess with her olive skin and long black hair and black bridesmaid's gown. Aoma was standing beside her, looking just as lovely, although her eyes were a little puffy. To my surprise, she was the only one who cried during the ceremony. When the band started to play, the two of them sought out the protection of Michelle's 5- and 6-year-old cousins, who impressively served as our official ring bearers. Watching the boys somberly lead my sisters out onto the dance floor, I thought they looked like young African princes in their little kente cloth caps and matching cummerbunds and wilted bow ties. The person who made me proudest of all, though, was Roy. Actually, now we call him Abongo, his Luo name, for 2 years ago he decided to reassert his African heritage. He converted to Islam and has sworn off pork and tobacco and alcohol. He still works at his accounting firm, but talks about moving back to Kenya once he has enough money. In fact, when we saw each other in Home Squared, he was busy building a hut for himself and his mother, away from our grandfather's compound, in accordance with Luo tradition. Abongo's new lifestyle has left him lean and clear-eyed, and at the wedding he looked so dignified in his black African gown with white trim and matching cap that some of our guests mistook him for my father. He was certainly the older brother that day, talking me through prenuptial jitters, patiently telling me for the 5th and 6th time that yes, he still had the ring, nudging me out the door with the observation that if I spent any more time in front of the mirror, it wouldn't matter how I looked because we were sure to be late. Toward the end of the wedding, I watched him grinning widely for the video camera, his long arms draped over the shoulders of my mother and Toot, whose heads barely reached the height of his chest. "Hey, brother," he said to me as I walked up to the three of them. "It looks like I have 2 new mothers now." Toot patted him on the back. "And we have a new son," she said, although when she tried to say Abongo, her Kansas tongue mangled it hopelessly. My mother's chin started to tremble again, and Abongo lifted up his glass of fruit punch for a toast. "To those who are not here with us," he said. "And to a happy ending," I said. We dribbled our drinks onto the checker-tiled floor. And for that moment at least, I felt like the luckiest man alive.